Hello, and welcome to the TAA teleconference, Is Textbook Writing for You? Presented by Michael D. Spiegler, Professor of Psychology at Providence College. Michael has been a successful textbook and academic author for 40 years with several leading psychology textbooks, including Contemporary Behavior Therapy, now in its 5th edition, and Personality, Strategies and Issues, now in its 8th edition. He has presented numerous workshops on textbook writing at universities, professional conventions, and will be presenting a 6-hour workshop entitled Textbook Writing 101 at the 2009 TAA Conference in San Antonio this June. Michael regularly reviews manuscripts for textbook publishers and serves as a consultant mentor to college textbook authors in diverse disciplines. He is currently writing a comprehensive handbook for college textbook writing. I now turn the teleconference over to Michael Spiegler.
So is he here today? Yes, he is. Ginny, thank you for the introduction. And now let's see if I can live up to the hype. We have a lot to cover in the next hour, so let's get started. Let me tell you, first of all, that I've been spending the last year, or actually more than a year, writing a textbook. I'm still at it. So what's nice about this for me today is that I get to share my passion for textbook writing with you. However, textbook writing is not for everyone, which actually is a good thing because my books will have less competition. Seriously, though, textbook writing is a major undertaking, and in the next hour we'll explore the question, is textbook writing for you? So basically, we're going to be covering 6 topics. First of all, reasons for writing a textbook, then personal prerequisites, professional prerequisites, what writing a textbook entails, getting the big picture of it. And here we'll look at the time commitment, and then how you can go about testing the waters before jumping in with textbook writing, and finally how you go about making a decision whether you should write a textbook. Because we've got, we have about 24 people signed up for this. I'm going to ask that we limit questions. What I'll do is, after the first two major topics, first three, I'll stop and ask for a few questions, and then I may have to stop you at that point and continue. But if I do that, if we can stay on track, then there'll be a good time at the end for questions. So I hope that's okay with all of you. And if you do have questions that you don't get a chance to ask during, then if you'll just drop them down and we'll talk about them at the end of the presentation. Okay, so let's begin and look at some reasons for writing a textbook. And I know that you, in the handouts, you have a list of reasons, but would you just take a second to think about what you think are the two best reasons for writing a textbook? Now, I suspect that for many of you, one of the reasons that you put down was money. And if you did think of money as one of the two good reasons for writing a textbook, you're probably going to be disappointed. Let me explain. Money really should not be the major reason because, among other things, it's not going to motivate you when the going gets tough. And there are going to be times that it is tough. The money will not come in for a long time. You're going to be paid a royalty, a percent of the sales. Now, that means that you won't start seeing any money until at least a year after your book is published. And since it's going to take a while for you to write the book, that money you will not have in your hand, in your bank account, or in your mattress for a while. Another reason that money is not a best reason for writing a textbook is that only the big textbooks make a lot of money. Now, when I'm talking about a big textbook is one that will sell a lot of copies. Usually introductory books do that because they have high enrollments in classes and the possibility of selling many books. Now, certainly a number of textbook authors make some money from this, a decent profit for the work that they've expended, and you can go out and splurge on some things with the money, and it's very nice to get the royalty checks. But you better keep your teaching position if that's what you're currently doing or whatever position you have, because you're not going to be able to live just as a textbook writer and earn enough money to live. So for most textbook authors, truly, you're lucky if you break even in terms of what you'll make and what your time is worth. In other words, you're not going to get a monetary profit. If you break up the number of hours, if you divide the number of hours that you put in writing this book by what you are going to make, or maybe it's the other way around, the hourly wage is going to be appalling. And I think I saw that there's a managerial position opened at our local Wendy's where you'll make more money. So let me know if you're interested and I'll send in your application. But there are better reasons for writing a textbook. One of them is scholarship. Textbooks often are not recognized as scholarship, but they are a form of scholarship. Minimally, they're a summary of a field, but they also can provide synthesis, analysis, criticism, a fresh perspective, novel ideas. And as you know, there's a growing recognition in academia of the scholarship of teaching, and textbook fits right into this paradigm. Another reason for writing a textbook is recognition. Certainly, you're going to get this recognition for people outside of academia. Relatives, friends hear you wrote a book, and oh, that's you wrote a book. That's very exciting. And among your students, if you use your book in one of the classes that you teach, they're going to be excited about this and impressed. When I do that, and it says on the syllabus that my name is an author of the book, they want to know, did you write the book? And I tell them, no, my father did. That's more believable to them. Within academia, the value of writing a textbook depends upon your institution and your colleagues. Some institutions, all institutions actually, want their name recognized. That's one of the reasons that they want you to publish. And it turns out that name recognition is much greater for textbooks than journal articles. Many more people see your name and your institution. The other thing is that textbooks are often known by the author's name rather than the title of the book. This is particularly true for introductory books where the titles can be all the same. For 100, there are 100 intro psych books, for example, that's my own field, that are called psychology. And so you know the name of the book actually by the author's name. So it's Bernstein or Myers, but not psychology. In terms of promotion and tenure, it depends on your college's view of textbook writing. If you don't know what they feel about it, then you need to ask. In your promotion and tenure review process, describe the value of textbook writing to your discipline in your personal statement, that it is scholarship, that it is teaching students in your field. Now, even if your college counts textbook writing as scholarship, it's usually best to write a textbook post-tenure because you can write many more articles than you can books in those pre-tenure years. Another good reason for writing a textbook is a way to learn about the subject matter in depth, to become an expert in the field. Sure, you must know what you're writing about to start writing the book, but you will have a much more in-depth understanding after you've completed the book, just as you do when you teach a course. Which brings us to a sixth reason for writing a textbook, and that is the reciprocal enhancement of teaching and learning. You can use what you are writing in class, and the students benefit this from this. They get the latest information, a fresh perspective, and your enthusiasm, given your involvement in the text. And you benefit from it also, because in your class preparation and your writing, those are likely to overlap. You'll get feedback from students on what you present, and this may lead to changes in what you've already been writing or new ideas for writing. I know that some of my best teaching goes on when I am writing a textbook for the course that I'm teaching in the same semester. Another reason for writing a textbook is so you can get to write about your field. This allows you to transmit your passion for it and present special things about it, things that you think are important. Another reason is meeting a need and making a contribution. There may be no textbooks that exist for a particular course. That's sometimes the case. Or the extant texts that are out there are inadequate in terms of the content they cover, perhaps the organization, or just the style in which they are written. Textbooks, writing a textbook, you can provide a new way of conceptualizing the material or a new theoretical approach. Another reason for writing a textbook is that you enjoy writing and teaching. Now, these are prerequisites for writing a textbook, but they're also reasons for writing one. Doing what you enjoy is very nice to be able to do. It's one of the things as an academic that I appreciate. I don't make a distinction between work and play because I really enjoy my work. And so if you really enjoy writing, you can do that. Writing, I see as sort of playing intellectually. You're synthesizing, analyzing, reconceptualizing this. All of this is fun. Presenting your unique perspective on your field. Turning others onto your field. Explaining things so that naive readers can understand. This is often difficult. Making it understandable at the same time not dumbing it down is a real challenge, but very rewarding when you can succeed. Textbook writing is teaching in a different format, so this gives you a chance to teach. Another reason for writing a textbook is if you're looking for a challenge, and no doubt textbook writing is a challenge. If you've got some free time, you want to use it professionally, and you want a direction in your professional life. Then there's a reason that sometimes people use for writing a textbook, and that is social interaction. And this is working with co-authors, interacting with colleagues, working with publishers. However, social interactions may not be an optimal reason for writing a textbook, as I'll tell you about shortly. And finally, people write textbooks because it sounded like a good idea at the time. We get prompting from colleagues and publishers in one of three ways. Actually, the first way where you may start writing a textbook is you get an idea for a book and you simply pursue it. But a second way that may be prompted is that a colleague may come to you and say, you know, you're really good at making economics come alive. You should write a textbook. So people inspire you to do that. And then another traditional way is that publishers solicit teachers to write textbooks. You have reps coming in trying to sell you books each semester, and they often ask, do you know anybody who could write a book in your field, or would you be interested in writing it? When you go to conferences at the in the conventions, you have people there, publishers, reps, you at the booths that they sell books at. They're always looking for people to write books. So those are some of the reasons for writing a textbook. And let me stop now and see if you have any questions about these. Well, if since none of you seem to have questions, I don't see any hands raised, and I hope that the teleconference is still going on, let's turn next to the prerequisites for writing a textbook, and we'll start with personal prerequisites. If you had a chance to complete the TAP in the handouts that you received, this is a rough evaluation of your personal prerequisites. Incidentally, TAP stands for the Textbook Writing Aptitude Profile. Now, as I go through these personal prerequisites, bear in mind that you don't have to have all of them. And a strength in some of them can compensate for limitations in others. If you're writing the book with someone else, your co-author or co-authors can compensate for your deficits. And there are degrees of meeting each of these prerequisites. It's not, you don't either have it or not have it. You can have degrees of it. Now, given time limitations today, I'll not comment on all of the prerequisites. Some of them will be fairly obvious to you. But if you need more clarification, just ask me when I stop for questions at the end of this section. And I've organized the personal prerequisites by category. The first category are cognitive skills. And the first one that came to mind when I was making this list is an attention for details. This is critical. There are so many details that you're going to have to be aware of. I'm in the midst of, as I told you, writing a book right now. Actually, I'm in the production phase, and there's so many things that I've got to keep in mind, have to look carefully at. So you have to have an attention to details, but not without having what I call a forest and trees perspective. You must always have the big picture in mind while you're working on specifics. Where do things fit in? When you're discussing a very small point in chapter 15, you have to remember, where does this fit in the scheme of things? Where have I introduced it? That sorts of thing. Another cognitive skill is being able to think in a linear, logical fashion. This is important for organizing topics and for the presentation that you will have. A second category would be temperamental and personality variables. Perhaps some of you have read the book or seen the movie, The Loneliness of the Long-Distance Textbook Writer. Well, it's not out yet, but it's a play on the loneliness of the long-distance runner. And there are some parallels in those titles. You need to be comfortable working alone. There are social aspects, as I mentioned, and that could be a reason for writing it. But most of your work is going to be done alone, even when you're working with one or more co-authors. Writing is a solitary, alone, if not lonely, profession. And that's true for writers of textbooks and writers, novelists, and others. it helps to have some type A characteristics. You certainly need to be internally driven, self-motivator. You need to be sensitive to timelines, deadlines. Have to have the ability to be able to tolerate multitasking, which I'll mention something about later. You need to be process-oriented rather than goal-oriented. The goal might be, after so much time and so much work, holding your bound book in your hand. A copy comes and you hold it. And let me tell you, that's exciting. I can remember the first time that I did that. It was 3 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time on May 7th, 1970. And I remember opening the box and taking it out. I can picture where it was at the time and starting to look through it, leaf through it, and just holding this thing in my hand. That was incredible. I was like, I felt the first time I ran a marathon. Well, I've written about 15 books and run about 17 marathons, and it's never been the same since. It turns out that what you really need to get you through is enjoying the process of writing the book. That's got to be the primary reward. So being process-oriented is important. It's also important to be open and receptive to criticism. You're going to be getting a lot of criticism, and you have to have the ability to benefit from it. And being able to do this will make your book better. A third category would be flexibility. And certainly the ability to compromise, except on bottom line issues, is important. All textbooks require compromises in various ways at various stages of the process, and you're going to have to be have the tolerance to be able to go along with that. Then another very important personal prerequisite is what I might call quasi-perfectionism. You can't be perfectionistic to an extreme. Your book will never be perfect in the sense of without flaws, without omissions, without errors. I think I'm pretty good at getting those omissions and errors out of my books, but I am always finding things from time to time that, oh, how did that stay in there? Well, that's going to happen. But if you are a perfectionist by nature, there's a way in which you can keep that. You can be a perfectionist if, first of all, you use the term perfect in its original meaning. The original meaning of the word perfect was to be finished or completed, but not necessarily complete. And we see this original meaning in the word, in the term, perfect tense, which is the past tense, indicating that something has already been completed. So you can be perfect in that sense. At the same time, you do need an attention to details and a high standard of excellence. Therefore, make perfectionism your goal, but don't expect to ever achieve it, in the modern sense, that is. The fourth category would be stick-to-itiveness. Textbook writing requires perseverance over many years, often without immediate reinforcement, so you're going to need a lot of delay of gratification, sacrifice of immediate goals for larger distant goals. You're also going to need stamina, both mental and physical, and don't underestimate the importance of keeping yourself healthy, physically fit. You may be aware, those of you who play chess, that chess masters, grandmasters, champions, they have a physical workout daily in order to be able to think as well as they do. The fifth category that I would mention are work habits. You've got to have a tolerance for the pressure of deadlines. And although deadlines aren't always fun, let me tell you that without publisher-imposed deadlines, very few textbooks would ever get published. I've already mentioned the ability to multitask. And then, of course, time management skills are critical. And then there are organizational skills. You need to be organized in two ways. One, externally in terms of your papers, files, books, computer files. It's very important, for example, to label files clearly so you know which is an older draft and which is the current draft. And then internally, you've got to be organized in terms of how you think, because the writing must be organized. And the sixth category is social support. You need an understanding and support of family, friends, and colleagues. This is critical for your own sanity and well-being, as well as theirs. So let me stop at this point and see if you have questions about personal prerequisites.
Michael, this is Bruce Safinski with J. Sargent Reynolds Community College in Richmond, Virginia. My field is American Sign Language and Interpreter Education.
Yes.
I've got a question, and if you just want to refer me to a basic psychology text, I can. I just continually hear people, especially students, and it usually seems to come as the answer, like they're offering up an excuse when they say, well, I'm a type A personality. And I never understood what are the characteristics of a type A personality. Can you just summarize maybe two or three important?
Sure.
What is a type A personality?
Okay. It's someone who... multitasking is a big part of it. So right now I would be talking to you on the phone, taking some notes, looking at my email, and chomping on my lunch.
Exactly what I'm doing. Okay, so that's one of them.
Okay, time sensitivity, and keep looking at your watch. I have to do that right now to be sure I stay on time, but if I was... certainly sitting at my desk and doing something, be checking my time. There is a sense of urgency for things. Somewhat impulsivity would be in there as well. Those are some of the major things. And as you know, you've heard that type A has implications for cardiovascular disease. But the caveat for that is, first of all, it's after age 40. So if you're younger than 40, you're okay. And then there also has to be an hostility component with that. So if you're type A and doing all these things, but you're not hostile, then you're okay for cardiovascular disease.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, well, I'm going to assume that there are no more questions, and let me go on then to look at professional prerequisites. And keep in mind, as with the personal prerequisites, that you don't need them all, and that strength in one area can compensate for another area. It's a matter of degree, not all or none. And you're also going to note some overlap between the personal and professional prerequisites. Okay, let's start off with probably the most obvious, and that is a knowledge of your subject matter. You have to know something, definitely a lot about it, but you may not consider yourself an expert at that time when you start, but you will when you finish. Second would be writing ability, both general writing ability, that you write easily, you've got the mechanics down pat, and then there's a lot of specific textbook writing skills that are very different than professional writing, as in journal articles and grant writing. And unfortunately, we don't have time to go into what those are today. But if you come to TAA and take my full-day workshop, you'll hear about those. Third would be teaching ability. There's a high correlation between good teaching and good textbook writing. The reason is that textbook writing is teaching in written words and some illustrations. The order of the presentation is critical. There need to be clear descriptions and explanations, cogent examples. You've got to hold the reader's attention. You've got to motivate learning, stimulate continued reading. I think of textbook writing as an ultimate form of teaching. You get to say it in one way for a diverse audience without the benefit of the feedback that you get in a classroom where you can look at faces, you can see hands raised, you can see who's asleep and who's awake. And I have to tell you that as I'm doing this teleconference, I'm realizing this is very parallel to what I'm doing right now, that I'm presenting it to an audience I don't know, and I'm not getting any feedback from you, whether you're understanding anything I'm saying, whether it's registering for you. Now, most good authors, good textbook authors, are good teachers. However, most good teachers are not good textbook authors because you need other qualifications. A fourth professional prerequisite is teaching a course in which the text is going to be used. This is really important to be able to produce a usable text. You need to know what students find difficult, what an optimal order of presentation of the material might be, what sorts of examples and illustrations help them understand the material. Now, if you're not teaching a course that would fit for your book, you need to go and do that, and you need to do it more than once. And even if it means like an overload or teaching another course, volunteer to do it. It's going to make a difference. And actually, if you teach a course over a number of years, this can be somewhat of a strategy for developing a textbook. Your notes and the way you present the course can be a rough outline for what the book is going to be. A fifth professional prerequisite is having time available. Can you fit it in with other professional duties, with your teaching, with your research, with your administration, any outside consulting that you do? And if not, can you eliminate some of your professional work for a period of time? Is release time available at your institution? And keep in mind, we'll look more at what the time commitment is, but we're not just talking about a semester or two here. And then, how about the time it will take from your personal life? Sixth would be the availability of resources. Library resources are important. I teach at a relatively small college, so we don't have a huge library, but we have interlibrary loan, which most libraries do, and that's helpful. Having the availability of assistance. And incidentally, I find I work with both undergraduates and graduate students as assistants for my books, and undergraduates work extremely well. You need to have a supportive professional environment. Your colleagues in your department and outside your department need to support you. They need to think what you're doing is worthwhile. Among other things, you may have to ask them for a little help from time to time, both with conceptualizing things and maybe when you get into real crunch times, you know, could you take over my class today? The administration's attitude at your college needs to be taken into account, and we've already touched on that issue. Last but not least, you have to have some facility with word processing, and most people have that today, but there are exceptions. You need to be able to type fairly fast, but if you can do it hunting and pecking, that's fine. But word processing is absolutely necessary for publishing today. You can't turn in something written on a yellow pad or a white pad. A while back, I worked with a co-author on a book who had no familiarity with word processing, and he would write out everything by hand. He would have an assistant type it in, then he would send me his drafts. I would make comments. His assistant would have to input them, and it would go back and forth like that, and it really was an impediment to our doing the book. So you've got to be facile with word processing, which isn't all that hard if you're not. So those are some of the professional prerequisites. Again, let me stop and see if you've got questions at this point.
This is Mary Lynn Darrington, Western Washington University, Washington State. My field is educational administration. We prepare principals and superintendents. I'm finding this extremely useful. My question is on the, I don't know if ethics is the word I want, but are there any caveats about using your class to field test your materials, I guess is what I want to say, and also once the book is published, having your class buy it to use it in your class?
Oh, good questions, Mary Lynn. I almost taught at your university many years back. It's a wonderful place, Bellingham.
Yes.
Can you see Mount Baker today?
No, it's raining as it usually is.
Yes, okay. Well, you see, that's why I didn't move there.
Okay. Right, right.
To answer your questions, I don't know of any ethical reasons that you can't use class test your material. I mean, you bring in handouts. You could assign journal articles. So there's no reason that I know of that you couldn't do that. And as for the students buying your book, I've never heard of any complaints about that. I mean, it is true that you will be making some royalty on this. I suppose if you were really skeptical or wanted to know about it, you could ask perhaps the legal department of Western Washington. And they give you a read on that. But I've never heard of these issues come up.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Michael?
Yes.
I have a question and a comment. I'm Judy Cavey. I'm basically right now an independent authoring a textbook. And my comment would have to be regarding textbook writing skills that we need to take the workshop. I'm disappointed. I'd really like to know what those writing skills are. Is there any other way to find out about the skills? Do you have those written in a book that you've authored, or how can you access that?
Not easily at this point.
Okay.
I'm sorry about that. And when this isn't just a come on or an ad for that. this is an extended discussion.
Okay.
So I certainly could not fit it in here. There could be a teleconference on this sometime in the future.
That would be wonderful because I definitely sign up for that. So,
okay.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. Well, I think I've waited more than the prerequisite 2 seconds you're supposed to wait for questions. So let me go on and thank you for those questions. So we've looked at reasons for writing a textbook and prerequisites for writing one. Now let's do a brief overview of what's required time-wise. And let me pose a question to you. Assuming that you've never written a textbook before, How long should it take from start to finish? So let's say right now, today, you have an idea for a textbook. In how many years should you be able to hold your bound book in your hand? So if you just put down years, and you can use fractions in there, and I don't know how, so I'll let you do that for a second. How many years? Start to finish. Okay, now assuming that you are facile with the, I guess it's the pound and the four button, let me just throw this out, and if you would not give your name and affiliation and all that information, but just throw out a number for me, and I'm going to start the bidding at 1.5 years. Do I have any takers for 1.5 years? Do I have a taker? Okay. How about 2 years?
Yes, I say 2 years.
2 years.
I say okay. Two.
Anybody 2.5? 3? 4?
Well, I'm taking 3.5.
3.5. Okay. That's the highest bid, 3.5. Do I have 4? Anybody higher than 4? Okay. Sold to 3.5.
Woohoo!
Okay. Congratulations. If you can do it in 3.5 years, you're a better person than I am. So let me go over this with you. There are four phases to writing a textbook. The first is preliminary work, then the writing itself, then producing the book, and then there's the post-production work. So the preliminaries. In the handout that you got, it says 6 to 12 months. I think that's a low estimate. As I thought about it, really 8 to 12 months plus. In this preliminary phase, you're going to be conceptualizing the book, even though you might have been thinking about it for a number of years. You're going to be writing a book proposal. You're going to be writing sample chapters, contacting publishers, hearing back from them, selecting a publisher, and negotiating a favorable contract. All of that is, you know, as I just heard myself say that, that's a year's at least of work. So that's the preliminary, at least 1 year. Then we have the writing phase. And I would allot anywhere from 2 to 4+ years for that. This includes writing several drafts, several rounds of peer reviews, and then revisions based on those reviews. Now, writing here has two meanings. One is the narrow meaning of just putting down the words for the text. But there are many other things you do when you write a text. And the broad meaning includes illustrations, writing captions for the illustrations, coming up with references, writing not basic text, but various boxes, putting in pedagogical features. All of that is a part of the writing. So that's the second phase, the writing phase, and that's 2 to 4 and maybe even more years. And then there's production. Production refers to everything from the time that you turn in your final manuscript, which includes all the illustrations, references, and so forth, until the book is in a bound version. This starts off with your manuscript will be copy edited, gone through both for grammatical sense issues as well as marking it up for the compositor. Then it will be put into proofs. Generally these days you just get one set of proofs. They're page proofs, so you'll see how your book is going to line up. Dealing with marketing and advertising issues, reviewing the proofs, of course, and that's the production year, and generally that takes about a year. And then I would allot 6 months to post-production tasks, which often involves writing supplements. So if you add all this up, it comes to a minimum of 4 years, start to bound books. 5 or 6 years is more realistically, and I don't know who won the bid at 3.5 years, but I wish him luck with that. And that's just for the first edition. Assuming that you're going to write a book that sells, which is what you wanted to do, and therefore it will go into subsequent revised editions, then you're talking about going through not the entire process again, but at least 2 years, 2 to 3 years perhaps, of work on each subsequent edition, which may come out every 3, 4, 5 years. So to state the obvious, textbook writing involves a major commitment of time. So, before you jump in and try to swim the English Channel, what might you do to test the waters and see if this is what you want? Let me give you a few things that you can do, roughly in order of the experiences that are closest to the actual writing of a textbook. First of all, you can author textbook chapters in other people's textbooks. Sometimes a textbook author is looking for one or two chapters to be authored by someone else because he or she may not be really know that area well, and so want to get an expert to do that. A second possibility is to write custom chapters. Or a whole book, actually, for your class. And Mary Lynn and I were talking about that a moment ago. So you can take this and you can write them for your class and you can actually test them out there. Third thing that you can do is to write special features for a textbook, like the critical thinking boxes, in the news boxes, writing the glossary for a textbook. And you can also write things like review questions. A fourth thing you can do is to write supplements, especially the student guide, because the student guide is almost like a textbook. So that's a good thing to do. Then there's reviewing proposals and manuscripts for publishers. This not only gives you some experience with publishing, but it also tells you what other people are doing and see how they do it, including you'll get examples of both good and less good textbook writing. Now, when you do one of these projects, like the last few, that involve you're working with a publisher, this has some benefits. First of all, editors get to know you. They get to know the quality of your analytic and critical thinking skills, your writing ability, your attention to details. They'll also see how well you work with deadlines, which is important. And then it's a reciprocal assessment process that goes on here, because you get a feel, albeit only a tickle, for working with publishers. You can also learn more about textbook writing by talking with textbook authors. If you are not already a member of TAA, it would be the best investment of your money. You can, and then of course, participate in TAA activities. And if you're familiar with Car Talk on NPR, I'm going to borrow from Ray and Tommy and say, you've just squandered another good hour listening to this teleconference. And the teleconferences, as you know, is just one of the benefits of being a member of TAA. And if you've never attended one of the TAA conferences, you've missed something very special. So I highly recommend them to you. Honestly, TAA conferences are probably the most informative and inspiring professional conferences that I've ever gone to. Okay, so finally, to conclude, let's return to the question, is textbook writing for you? So the decision to write a textbook should be based, I think, on four factors. The first one is having a sound reason or reasons for writing a textbook. Secondly, to possess personal and prerequisites that are necessary. You don't need them all, as I said, but the more the merrier. And bear in mind that some of these prerequisites can be learned or developed. Third, you need to be informed about the nature of the commitment and what writing a textbook entails, especially the time commitment. And I hope we've at least started you on that process of being able to give informed consent. And finally, you've got to have the motivation to do what's necessary to write a textbook. Textbook writing is challenging and extremely rewarding. I surely can recommend it to you. However, it isn't for everyone. If the fit is good for you, go for it. If not, given the immense time commitment, this is a good time to make your mark in other endeavors, professional endeavors. So I hope that I've given you some of the basics of what to consider in making this decision, and I hope that some of you will want to join the ranks of textbook authors. And so let me stop here and get any and all questions that you have.
Thank you. This is Mary Lynn Darrington again. You certainly have provided many of the basics. My question is another question on writing timeline you mentioned.
Okay.
You said that you've written 15 books, and if an average year it takes this number of years is, let's say, 5 years, that'd be like 75 years if they're linear. So are you working on multiple books at a time?
Oh, well, I started when I was 3. I forgot to tell you that.
That leaves me out. I'm well beyond that.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes I do. But I think your timeline is a little bit off. I don't think it's 75 years. I mean, if you say they did a book every... Yes, no, you're right. I can't do the math. Yeah, I've worked on multiple books, and some of them have been revisions, so that they don't take a full like 4+ years.
Oh, understood. Okay, thank you.
You were listening closely. Thank you.
This is a good topic. I'm interested.
Michael, this is Judy Cavey again.
Yes, Judy.
I have a question for you, and I've been shot down before for even mentioning this to other people who really don't understand the full scope of what I'm talking about, and that is self-publishing.
Yes.
I've done a lot of research on this, and as far as bringing a self-published item into my classroom to test it, to me, I think that's a safe way to go, given the time, effort, and everything else that's involved in going through a publisher, et cetera, et cetera. And I wanted to get your feel on that, and if you have any experience with that personally.
I don't personally, but I am asked about this all the time at the courses and workshops I give, so... using it for your own class, there's no problem there. I see the problem with self-publishing is you've got to do everything.
Mm-hmm.
So that means you've got to put it, you've got to do the composition of it, the copy editing of it, the composition. Now, you can farm some of these things out. You can pay other people to do it.
Mm-hmm.
The actual printing of it, binding of it, and... That, I think, is relatively easy. What I wonder about is how, if you want to use this outside of your class, how you're going to advertise it, promote it, market it, do all of those things, and then distribute it. I, for one, for example, don't want to be spending my evenings taking the orders that come in, packing them in boxes, carrying them upstairs, sending them out, sending out bills. that's you know, that whole idea of distribution is not something I'm interested in. So if you're willing to do all those things, or have someone who can do them, or are willing to pay to have those done, and it can be advertised and marketed well, then go for it.
Okay. Yeah, that answers my question, because I have thought about all that you mentioned and really took it into consideration on a deep level, and feel that I am able to do it. Of course, once I start it, that's going to be the test. So.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
But remember that you can get help with many of these phases.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Judy.
Hi, this is Lisa Cannon from the University of San Diego School of Law, and I teach legal writing.
Oh.
I also write fiction, and so I know a whole lot about what you do once you, you know, have a book that you want to try to get published in the trade world. But let's say you've decided that you meet these criteria here. How do you go about actually then, you know, getting something published or in the line for publishing? And do you have to have, you know, a sample chapter plus an outline, or what exactly would you need to in order to approach publishers?
Well, the best thing is to go on the publisher's website,
mm-hmm.
and there'll be something about submitting manuscripts to prospective authors, and they will tell you what they want.
Okay.
And it will be a prospectus or proposal, and they'll provide you with the information that you want, that they want, and they may say, you know, send one, two, three sample chapters. It's fairly standard that the questions that are asked between publishers and the number of chapters that they, sample chapters that they ask for.
Okay, great, thanks.
Okay.
Hello. My name is Marielle Hoffnagels. I'm at the University of Oklahoma, and I'm in biology.
Yes.
I already have a textbook. I'm actually working on the second edition, so I just really am in this just because I was wondering if there was anything that I hadn't considered. I said yes. So I was interested in what you said about having graduate and undergraduate assistants, and I was wondering if you paid for those yourself or if the publisher helps you pay for them, and just how you came to those arrangements.
Okay. There are a variety of ways. Sometimes through a grant through the publisher, I've been able to use that money to pay assistance. Sometimes they have been part of the work study program at the college. And a third way is that I have done independent study courses with students, which essentially is an apprenticeship to textbook writing. And so they learn not only about the subject material in depth, but they learn all about how you write a textbook. And so those are the three major ways, I think, that I've gotten students to help me.
Hey, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
This has been an educational presentation brought to you by the Text and Academic Authors Association.